You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Well, the Trayvon Martin case changing as we go. George Zimmerman, the man who, I think there's an absolute consensus, killed Trayvon Martin. Whether it was murder or not is being debated. You got Sean Hannity out there saying, we know for a fact that this guy, that the 17-year-old kid who weighed 100 pounds less than George Zimmerman. This was, which clip was this? This is clip number 13, was it not? Yeah.
What we know now is we have an eyewitness that saw Trayvon Martin beating up Mr. Zimmerman and pounding his head into the ground and breaking his nose and putting lacerations in the back of this guy's head.
Right. Now, unfortunately, none of those show up in the police photos. None of those show up on in the booking photo. Actually, it wasn't even a booking, you know, but he was taken to the police station briefly. Apparently uninjured. But how did this become a right-left issue? Oh, it's a black-white issue. Oh, it's about a white guy or a not African-American guy killing a black kid. And now maybe, now, as the result of the outrage of a nation, after too many African-American young people, well, people of all ages and genders, have been murdered by people whose skin is lighter in color and therefore have more immunity under the law, and particularly now in these states where they've got these so-called right to stand your ground and shoot first laws, the prosecutor is at 6 o'clock, which will be just as this show signs off, is going to be holding a press conference revealing what charges she's going to be bringing against George Zimmerman. So we'll see where this goes, but and everybody is speculating, you know, what is it going to be? Meanwhile, Mayor Bloomberg came out today, and he had some great numbers. He was talking about how in Florida, first of all, he said you cannot have a civilized society where everybody has a gun and make their own decisions as to whether someone's threatening or not. And there are more guns than people. And he talked about how in Florida, since Jeb Bush signed the Stand Your Ground and Shoot First law, the number of so-called justifiable homicides has almost tripled, or more than tripled. That in Georgia, it had more than doubled. And he cited several states. He just went through the statistics. This is Mayor Bloomberg of New York City. The so-called Stand Your Ground and Shoot First laws, brought to you by the NRA and Walmart, peddled to state legislators, Republican state legislators, by the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, funded by the Koch brothers. It's pretty amazing when you see a fairly direct line from right-wing billionaires funding, you know, front groups that are actually writing our nation's laws, to a dead kid in Florida. And then a campaign on right-wing hate radio and television on Fox so-called news to try to make the victim the perpetrator. I mean, tell me this makes any sense. We've all heard the audio tape of George Zimmerman chasing this kid. We've all heard the audio tape of the police officers saying to Zimmerman, stop chasing him. Or words to that effect. And yet Zimmerman is the well, we will find out today. By the way, February 26th is the day that Trayvon Martin was shot and killed. Today is April 11th. So what's that, about 6 weeks? I guarantee you that in this case, if the dead 17-year-old had been white and the person who outweighed him by 100 pounds and was 10 or more years older had been black, the shooter would have been in jail at day one, from day one to this day and probably for the rest of his life. You tell me that there's not racism in this country or that our laws are applied equally? Speaking of equal application, it's time for the billionaires to start partying. Rick Santorum is out of the race. Foster Freeze was the billionaire who was funding him, a Wall Street billionaire. He's now come out and said that he's going to start funding Romney. And he said he might donate to Karl Rove's super PACs. Karl Rove has committed to get $300 million to take down President Obama and various Democrats in state races and federal races around the country. And meanwhile, Newt Gingrich apparently has lost his billionaire, Shelley Adelson, the Chinese casino tycoon, or Macau, close enough, and Hong Kong, I believe. Newt Gingrich bounced a $500 check to the state of Utah yesterday for the primary. And his campaign is not returning calls. So all of what this means, basically, is that the whole right-wing treasure chest that had been funding the, you know, alternative to Romney campaigns is now all going to shift to Romney. Shelley Adelson, Foster Freeze, Paul Singer, all the millionaires and billionaires on Wall Street. It's a reasonable guess. I mean, some of them have come out and said it, but it's a reasonable guess that most of these guys, the Republican Party is their front. That they're going to be shifting to the Republican Party but they're not going to be giving money to the party. This is the interesting thing. Like, for example, right now, one of the big stories that's being covered is in Massachusetts. Elizabeth Warren is out fundraising Scott Brown. Well, yeah. And they both said no PACs. Right. Try to stop them. You can't. It's illegal. You can't. If you're a candidate, now the Democratic PACs, they don't have that much money and there aren't that many of them, so probably they will take Elizabeth Warren at her word and not go into Massachusetts. But do you really think that Karl Rove is not going to spend money in Massachusetts to make sure that Scott Brown gets reelected? I don't think Scott Brown thinks that. I think Scott Brown believes that Karl Rove is going to be right there. And the U.S. Chamber of Commerce and all the rest of them. Especially the banksters. The banksters now constitute a quarter of our economy. And passing out high interest rate but available credit cards to people with bad credit scores, up 12% over last year. What does this mean? It means that, you know, this is targeting the poor, targeting people with bad credit, targeting the working poor, targeting the working middle class who've been wiped out by the Bush Great Recession. That's called predatory lending. That's a quarter of our economy. Used to be manufacturing was a quarter of our economy. Now it's around 10%. Used to be banking was around 10% of our economy. Now it's over a quarter. What's wrong with this picture? And the banking now has turned predatory. There's variations on this. The Justice Department has just sued Apple and book publishers over ebook pricing, right? Antitrust lawsuits. Basically, what we have in every industry, whether it's banking or ebook publishing, is monopolies or duopolies or triopolies. But basically, you know, it's monopolistic behavior. And, of course, if the libertarians had their way, there would be no Justice Department lawsuits because there would be no antitrust laws. One company would set the rates for all of our books. Cool, huh? We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Amazing. And, oh, another thing that's going to make the libertarians' heads explode. I got to tell you about antibiotics and livestock right after this. Good news for the humans.
It's crazy, crazy, crazy. No stopping in this warfare. It's crazy, crazy.
So the big news, of course, that has seized the news cycle that the media will be all day, every day, all the time talking about is that in a few hours, the prosecutor in Florida is going to let us know what charges, if any. Well, presumably, she's already said there will be criminal charges filed against George Zimmerman. His lawyers came out yesterday and said that they couldn't find him, they couldn't communicate with him, and suggested that he had left the state. In fact, clip number 9, I believe, is that, Jacob. Here's what one of his lawyers had to say about this.
Withdrawing his counsel for Mr. Zimmerman. We've lost contact.
Oh, that's another one?
We're withdrawing his counsel for Mr. Zimmerman. We've lost contact with him. Up to this point, we've had contact every day. He's gone on his own. I'm not sure what he's doing or who he's talking to, at this point, we're withdrawing his counsel.
Yeah, okay. So he's gone on his own. We're not sure what's up. But law enforcement seems to be pretty solid. They're not all that worried about it. They know where he is. They know what he's up to. You know, he's busy calling Sean Hannity. That's what he's been up to. Oh, I shouldn't make light of it. A young man died. A young man died a violent and unnecessary death. Because the Koch brothers and other right-wingers and large corporations in America decided that it would be a really cool idea if they got together and wrote laws that they would then give to mostly Republican legislators in state legislatures all across the country at meetings twice a year of the so-called American Legislative Exchange Council. And then those Republican legislators, being good soldiers and getting good campaign donations and other forms of support, would take those laws into their state legislatures and pass them. And so 20, 21 states now have these stand your ground and shoot first laws that basically say that while there are restraints on what our soldiers in Afghanistan can do, they must first shout, then they must show their weapon, then they must fire a warning shot. Then they must try to restrain the person, shove the person. Shout, show, shove, shoot. That's the order, right? And then after they've done all that, they can shoot somebody. So soldiers can't do what George Zimmerman did. Police officers all across the nation may not use deadly force unless they believe that they are in imminent danger of death themselves. In other words, if they perceive deadly force is being used against them, they can use it back. But there has to be, they have to clearly perceive deadly force. I don't think there's a police officer in this country who would take the stand and say with a straight face that a can of iced tea and a bag of Skittles in the hands of a skinny 17-year-old represents imminent danger of death to anybody. Especially to somebody armed with a handgun. So police officers don't have this right. Soldiers don't have this right on the battlefield. But if you're in the state of Florida, ever since Jeb Bush signed this law in 2005, saying, oh, this is a great idea, another law that came to us from the Koch brothers, all the big corporations. This one from the NRA and Walmart. How great is that? Ever since Jeb Bush signed this law, if you have a gun in Florida and you feel afraid, you can stand your gun and shoot first. And then find out if the person has a weapon. How cool is that? Well, apparently a lot of people think it's really cool because the number of so-called justifiable homicides in Florida has tripled since Jeb Bush signed this law. This is absolutely incredible. Okay, I mentioned Branch. There's a bunch of stuff in the news that I want to just very briefly cover so that you, at the end of this show, you can say, yeah, okay, I know what's going on in the world today. Libertarians forever have been saying, we don't need those stinking regulatory agencies. That's big government. That's a horrible thing. Well, there's going to be tens of thousands of Americans who are going to die this year and hundreds of thousands more who are going to get serious infections from bacteria that have become antibiotic resistant. Not because too many humans are taking antibiotics, but because farmers can go down to the local feed store and buy antibiotics to give to their animals, and they don't need a prescription. And it's been going on for years, for decades, routinely giving antibiotics to animals because the factory farm processes are so gruesome that they increase infection rates. And some animals, you give them antibiotics, and they fatten up a little faster. But the problem is that the bugs that live in those animals are also the bugs that live in us. E. coli H157, for example. If my memory serves me right. Or maybe it's H150, whatever it is. That particular E. coli that causes kidney failure and kills you. That came out of animals. The strains of Listeria that we're seeing right now came out of animals, came out of animal agriculture. Most of the food poisoning. Talk to somebody in their 60s, 70s, 80s. They will tell you when they were a kid, you could get steak tartare raw. You know, they served raw food in restaurants. People would routinely take a raw egg and toss it into their beer in the bar, or in the morning put it in their milkshake. You don't do that anymore. But it's even worse than that. I mean, you know, now we've got flesh-eating bacteria, right? MRSA and all these things. Methicillin-resistant Staphylococcus aureus, or Streptococcus aureus, whichever it is, one or the other. So anyhow, the good news is that the federal food regulators announced today that farmers and ranchers, for the first time in history, are going to be required to get a prescription from a veterinarian before they can soup up their pigs, cattle, chicken, other animals. This is very, very good news for American consumers. And once again, the libertarians are crying in their beer.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Their beer that they're afraid to put a raw egg into. Because it might have Listeria or E. coli. Oh, my.
It's not
this is also just given that all this Trayvon Martin, George Zimmerman stuff is going on with the prosecutor's office down in Florida. This was supposed to be a big news day for the president. He's holding an event at the White House with a group of patriotic millionaires. A bunch of millionaires are showing up, people who earn over $1 million a year, to say that they support the Buffett rule, that they think that they should pay the same income tax that their secretaries make on any income they make over $1 million, which seems to me like that's pretty damn generous. But the Republicans are hysterical about that. Anyhow, back to the other news of the day. DiCarlo in Oakland. Hey, DiCarlo, what's up?
Hey, how you do, Tom?
Good.
I just wanted to comment on the Trayvon Martin situation again.
Mm-hmm.
And just say, look, this is primarily systematic institutional discrimination that is being supported by multinational conglomerates and also local and state governments. I mean, when you think about this, when you have a situation where somebody has been hunted down, because let's face it, he was hunted down.
Yes.
Trayvon Martin was, and then the man stood over him after he shot him, even with the boy asking for help. And then on top of that, they show the video of the man getting out of the car, no marks on him, and then having Fox News, News Corporation, standing up for the Nazi Party and all of the things that
calling them a civil rights group.
Claiming them as a civil rights group. I mean, this kind of statements are atrocious. I mean, if anybody else had done this, if instead of this being a black person, it was someone of a different ethnicity, trust me, I guarantee a lot of this stuff would be down. There wouldn't be any question about anyone waiting and saying, oh, okay, here, we're going to wait a week or two afterward. It would all be taken care of.
Try five or 6 weeks, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is the point I made originally. If the 17-year-old who had been shot, you know, a skinny 17-year-old kid who had been shot was white, and the guy holding the gun who had shot him, who outweighed him by 100 pounds, who had chased him a block or two, was black, it would be a completely different scenario. First of all, we wouldn't have heard about it because there wouldn't have been a national outrage, because there would have been an arrest within seconds. And that guy would be gone forever. And secondly, if we did hear about it, it would have been in the context of another boogeyman story, these black people are out to get white people, stories. And I'm telling you, what I'm hearing from my listeners and my viewers is that is that African Americans in this country live in a whole lot more fear than white people do about the other race coming after them and hurting them.
So, wait, say that last part over again, please.
I said what I am hearing is that African Americans live in more fear of whites killing them or harming them than whites live in fear of blacks coming after them. Go ahead.
Oh, no, I was going to – no, I agree with you. Look, I'm going to tell you, as I am a 44-year-old man now, and I'm going to tell you, I've been pulled out of a car at gunpoint. I've been pulled out of a car at gunpoint and shotgun point, and I'm not a drug dealer. I'm not a drug dealer. I'm not anything. I've done nothing nefarious within my life. All I've done is I'm actually a public servant for the community. I work within the school. And I've been pulled out at gunpoint. I've had my car stripped and searched. And it's like, well, what's going on? Well, yeah, you fit the description for someone else. I've been pulled out and had a gun in my head. This has all happened. And I'm just saying, if I'm a person who is not causing trouble, imagine what people who are walking down the street and have people in their neighborhood every single day, imagine what they're going through. Yeah. So trust me, yes, there is an increased fear because of what's happened.
Yeah.
And again, I'll even bring up one other good example that could go with this is the gentleman who was shot 41 times in his own vestibule in New York City for pulling out his wallet.
Right.
I mean, this is the kind of stuff that when it happens, and again, I'm not negating the law enforcement community at all, but I'm saying when this kind of stuff happens and then it happens again and again and again, people do start feeling anxious about the situations around them.
Right.
If you're walking down the street and then a police car goes by, yes, you do feel a little tense, even though you've done nothing wrong.
Yeah. The fact of the matter is, in the United States, and this is the tragedy, that there is no crime of walking while white, but there is a crime of walking while black.
Exactly. Love that. Look, again, Charles Stewart, Susan Smith, they said that people of color had done something to them. They went around, people walking down the street, they randomly selected them and then accosted them. They actually almost had a suspect in the Charles Stewart case where they said, yeah, we found the guy that did this to the woman. And when they, in reality, they found out that it was the white husband that actually had done it.
Right.
But they had a suspect. I mean, so this is the kind of stuff that goes on.
And you know, I suppose we should congratulate ourselves that had this been 50 years ago, that black suspect would have gone to the death chair or to prison for life or worse. Mm. And now at least we're starting to question these things. I see this outrage over Trayvon Martin's killing as a starting point, but as a good sign, frankly, that as a society we're willing to discuss these things, confront these things, and that there are enough people of color in the media who are high profile, which was not the case 20 and 30 years ago, who can speak out on these issues, that they can bring these to national attention.
And I agree with you, Tom. But the biggest thing with that, though, is that a lot of times with these people of color in positions of power who are in, you know, media, mm-hmm. is that they don't get sold out. Because a lot of times what happens is they ultimately start getting interwoven with some of these big multinational corporations, and then their voice is silenced.
Yeah, or they become Republicans and live very well.
Which is the same thing.
what can you say? DiCarlo, thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you.
I appreciate it. And thanks a lot for watching Free Speech TV there in Oakland. Larry, listening on Chicago's Progressive Talk, WCPT in Chicago. Hey, Larry, what's up?
Hey, I got two comments. Mm. You just mentioned about a crime of walking while black.
I think
you phrased it that way.
Yeah.
That is not a crime. The actual crime is policing while prejudiced.
I agree. I was being facetious, but
I know you were, and people say that all the time. But what it does is it takes the blame off of the perpetrator and puts it on the victim.
You're right.
The main comment I wanted to ask about, maybe you know, the law, Stand Your Ground law.
Yeah.
Does that in any way stop the police department from doing a normal homicide investigation? You know, like they do on television where they come out with the tape and they take photographs and they, you know, have everything all laid out and trying to figure out, you know, exactly what happened. Does that law stop that?
No, it doesn't. And in fact, if George Zimmerman is charged, and it looks like he will be, and if he's charged with murder, and I'm guessing it's going to be second degree murder, but that's just a totally uninformed guess. It will be the result of good police work. It'll be the result of the autopsy. It'll be the result of ballistics evidence that indicates how far away the gun was, what angle it was pointed at, whether or not there was any evidence.
Was all of that done a month ago? Or?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And frankly, the police department, we're getting conflicting stories out of the police department. You know, there's some people who are saying we were arguing that the George Zimmerman should have never have left this police department, that he should have been held as a suspect and we should have done our due diligence. And then there's other people who are saying, well, we couldn't because he claimed, that he felt terrified. And therefore, under the Stand Your Ground laws, you've got to let somebody go until you can build a case against them. And if you choose to.
Even if they haven't, looked at all the evidence, they know that, it's an unarmed.
Hard to say. I mean, there are people. I've talked to people on this program who are stand your ground and shoot first, and let's use the whole name of it because they're not really called stand your ground laws, and they're really not called to shoot first. I mean, these are just the actual laws have some other fancy name, but let's call them stand your ground and shoot first laws because that's what they allow. Is they allow people to shoot first. And unlike our soldiers in Afghanistan who have to display their weapons and try to subdue their subjects and shout at their subjects and fire a warning shot, you have to go through that sequence. And presumably police officers, not presumably, for a fact, police officers have to go through a similar process of determining whether or not there's a genuine viable threat against them that justifies the use of deadly force. In those states, in those 25, I said 21 earlier, it turns out it's 25 states now, that have passed this Koch brothers-inspired or funded ALEC, NRA, Walmart legislation, the stand your ground and shoot first laws, people can simply shoot first. And so we've seen this explosion in so-called justifiable homicides that Mayor Bloomberg was talking about this morning.
But they still need a proper investigation.
They do.
I think you have a great show.
Thank you very much. Thanks a lot, Larry. Thanks for the call. And we need to be moving ahead on this. Rob in Iron Mountain, Minnesota. Rob, just a minute here till the break. A quick one?
Oh, really quick, Tom. Thanks for losing the tie, and it's where you look good on TV.
Okay.
But at the same time, it's where, what is the Republican platform for 2012? Alan Grayson, the last congressman from Florida, it's where he said it well. It's where die and die quickly. It's where let's kill Planned Parenthood. Let's kill the President Obama's medical, Obamacare, and stuff like this. And, I could go on and on. Couldn't you, expand on that?
Well, that's always been the Republican platform. Every progressive change, and thank you for the call, Rob, every progressive change that we've had in the United States, from the 40-hour work week to minimum wage to unemployment insurance to workplace health and safety standards to workman's compensation to fill in the list, right? To the obvious things like Medicare, Social Security. Republicans opposed all of them. All of them.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
So how do you expect them to run in anything other than saying no? Paul Ryan, no to Medicare. Let's voucherize it. Hand it over to Wall Street. Welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you. Bert in East Hampton, Massachusetts. Hey, Bert, what's up?
Yes, good afternoon, Tom.
Good afternoon, Bert.
I just want to say, for 21 years, I kind of outlived my retirement. I'm alive, and I'm living in the Massachusetts area, but I lived in the Sanford area. So if I can help you with any questions, answer away.
Yeah, I'm curious. What is the racial and socioeconomic makeup of Sanford, Florida?
Well, it's average people. A lot of them Hispanics are in construction, although it's very down. And I had a company there, as a matter of fact, so I did some work in Sanford. I actually lived in Poinciana.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is, all the areas in that really kind of down. The whole country is down economy-wise, you know that. Mm-hmm. And naturally, there are blacks getting jobs that the whites would want. So you've got a real problem there, mm-hmm. believe me. But the biggest problem is there is no equal justice, really.
Mm-hmm.
And this wouldn't even have taken place if the mother of Martin, the Martin family, didn't make a thing about it. It would have been covered over because that's what the press likes to do. You will notice it's been like six or seven weeks now.
Yeah, say he was killed on February 26th.
Right, and the main paper there, I'm not going to mention any names of paper, but it's in Orlando. They had a little line, a couple of lines, that there was a black child boy killed, and that's it. Hmm. But if the family didn't, and if the black people didn't get behind this family, it would have been all washed over.
Yeah.
And I know why. I know who pays the police. The police are not part of the public. There is a big, strong company. Well, actually, it's, I'll use the name Mafia, that controls this area of Florida almost 100%.
What is that?
Do you want the name of it?
The
name is sure. Severn Trent.
Wait, what is this, a construction company or a...
Well, I'll tell you what, you can look them up in a computer, too,
yeah.
Because I did this.
So this is the largest
Severn
industry
Trent,
in the area?
Severn Trent is the main builder and probably one of the biggest builders in the United States. Uh-huh. It's called Severn Trent Avatar.
Uh-huh. So you, but you would think that a big company in an area that controls a large part of the economy of the area would want stability, and justice usually produces stability.
Well, if it's equal justice, but
yeah.
It's not.
Yeah.
Severn Trent doesn't want black people walking through. I don't know if that was exactly a key lock area,
mm-hmm.
but they don't want people walking down the streets in a neighborhood that they build up.
I see.
In my neighborhood, Severn Trent Avatar built 130,000 homes. Wouldn't you say that was a big builder?
I would say so, yeah. No, this was, yes. This happened.
And as I say, anything I tell you, you can look up in your computer easy.
Yeah.
Severn Trent is also Severn Trent Water. Their main office is in, I believe, Philadelphia, but overall, they're in the U.K., and they've been even indicted by Scotland Yard Severe Fraud Division.
Okay,
this
Bert,
company
Bert, I'm going to have to stop this at this point because you're starting to say I have no knowledge of these things. I can't verify them, and you're wandering into. And I don't mean that as a pejorative, but I mean the conversation is now moving into an area that could be considered libelous if it's not true. And I would like to check these facts before we go any farther. But I appreciate your call and your concern. And your candor, you get points for that. But let's also give the company the benefit of the doubt, at least for the moment. I mean, everybody is innocent until convicted. Linda in Deerfield Beach, Florida. Hey, Linda, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Tom. I too am a Michigander. I moved down here 27 years ago, and I'm like, what have I done?
So,
but my question to you is: this was, I know you don't believe in conspiracy theories, but the governor handpicked her as the prosecutor. She is a Republican.
She's a Republican, and today she's blowing up the president's signature kickoff event for his presidential campaign.
Exactly. She's pulling that because, you know, my neighbor and I were talking about this very thing today. I gave him the shock doctor, and he read it. He goes, oh, my God, that's what this Trevon case is all about. Keep it in the news. Keep everybody confused. I mean, yes, it's a tragedy. We all know it's a tragedy. But he said, everybody's so focused on that these guys are getting away with murder. The banks are still doing what they're doing. You know, this guy's still doing what he's doing. They're trying to pass this legislation here, and nobody's paying any attention to what's really going on.
Right.
And I said, exactly.
And thank you, Linda. Very well said. And here's what's really going on. What's really going on is today the president and a group of patriotic millionaires are doing a tour. I have the story here someplace. Here it is right here. 20 patriotic millionaires will attend a White House press conference with President Obama, and then they're going to tour a Head Start facility. Because if the millionaires were just paying their taxes, we could easily fund Head Start nationwide. Young people could get a Head Start. And they've got this list of the patriotic millionaires. Robert Abernathy, I'm assuming it's alphabetical, president of the American Standard Development Company and Self-Storage Management Company. Michael Alexander, founder of Student Financial Aid Services. Lawrence Bennison, partner of Bennison Capital. And goes on through the list of these 20 millionaires who are joining the president and saying, hey, millionaires should pay the same taxes as working people. But right now, millionaires like Mitt Romney, so this is probably the single most potent campaign tool, weapon, that the president has against the Romney candidacy, is the fact that Mitt Romney was born in the 1% and to this day is making tens of millions of dollars a year and paying 13.9% taxes on it. Nothing. And that Mitt Romney wants to keep it that way. He opposes the Buffett rule. Well, that got blown off the front pages of the paper, didn't it? We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And happy birthday to Jacob Dean, our associate producer, who helps make this program possible. Jacob is one of the hardest working guys in radio. He is absolutely spectacular. He's got his own show on Radio or Not. And God bless you, Jacob. Thank you. Happy birthday. Great to have you with us. Anyhow, Alan Corwin is with us. The website gunlaws.com. He is the owner-operator of Bloomfield Press, author of numerous books, including his latest, After You Shoot. And, Alan, welcome to the program.
Very nice to be with you at last, Tom.
Thanks for joining us. I'm curious, setting aside for a moment the merits, and we can certainly debate those, of a stand your ground and shoot first law giving more latitude to the average citizen to shoot somebody than our police officers have or our military has in Afghanistan. Don't you think that there's a problem when we have lobbying groups and corporations who benefit from legislation, specifically the NRA that makes more money selling weapons, represents the weapons manufacturers, and Walmart, which has fewer lawsuits when more homicides are called justifiable, literally writing laws and having them laundered through the Koch brothers, American Legislative Exchange Council, to lawmakers in various states to pass?
Boy, that's a mouthful, Tom. You've got about six things in there. There is no shoot-first law. A self-defense law in America allows you to protect your life or the life of your family or other innocents if you're seriously threatened with serious bodily injury or death. That's been law since the first written law in 1700 B.C. So it's not really shoot-first. If somebody's coming at you with a club trying to kill you and he's just killed somebody else, you don't have to wait for him to hit you over the head. And I think that's good law. Wouldn't you agree?
No. I would say that
you
good law.
Hit first?
Do police officers operate under the law?
Oh, absolutely. Well, most of the time.
When can a police officer discharge his weapon?
To prevent a serious bodily injury, certain enumerated crimes, the real heinous ones, murder, arson of an occupied structure, rape, a sexual assault of a minor.
It's a very specific series of events that they have to go through. Same with our soldiers in Afghanistan. They had the first, what was the sequence? Shout, show. You had to shout, stop, show your weapon, shove. You've got to try to stop the offender using non-lethal force, and then finally discharge your weapon in a way that's not lethal. Shoot a warning shot. And then you can use lethal force. And if a soldier doesn't do those things, they will be brought up on charges, unless they're being shot at to begin with.
To the best of my knowledge,
Trayvon Martin could not shoot George Zimmerman with a bag of Skittles.
Well, I can't speak to what the military does. And the Trayvon Martin case will come down to, if justice is served, either Zimmerman will be found guilty and punished, or Zimmerman will be found innocent, and then it's actually a heroic act.
No, I would say that's nonsense.
In the middle of the commission of a felony, then that's a good thing.
Right? Alan, no, you have completely missed the point then. I don't disagree with that statement in the abstract. But the fact of the matter is that for 6 weeks, a guy who chased somebody down and shot them for the crime of walking while black in a white-gated community, that guy has been running around loose on the streets.
You don't know that that's true. If, as the evidence seems to show...
I have heard the... Have you not heard the 9/11 tape of him talking to the police and the police specifically telling him, stop chasing that kid?
I listened to all the 9/11 tapes, and apparently Zimmerman was getting back into his car and attacked from behind. If that's true, and if his head was being smashed into the concrete, that's a serious threat. You can lose your sight. You can die from
that. And it would have showed up in the videotape of him in the police department, and there was none of that.
That wouldn't have showed up in the videotape. Whatever happened on the ground, whoever was on top, and if the guy's head was being smashed into the ground.
What's he doing chasing a kid who's walking back from the store to begin with?
You're missing the point here.
No, this is the point. The point is that white people in this country now feel if they've got a gun, like they've got the power to kill black people and not have to answer for it.
Well, that's
they felt that way for a long, long time, but these kind of laws put it on steroids.
That's absolute nonsense. You don't have that right. If you do that, you go to prison or you're executed.
Not true.
If you do what you described, it's
not true.
If
the African American community had not raised a stink about this, George Zimmerman would still be free, and you know it.
George Zimmerman still is free, last I heard.
You get my point.
No, but George Zimmerman still is free. There has to be enough evidence to charge you with a crime. If, in fact, he was defending himself against a felonious assault,
Alan,
he should go free, and this was an honorable
Alan,
situation.
Alan, setting aside the I mean this as a genuine and honest question.
Go ahead.
Do you believe that if the 17-year-old who got shot had been a white, blonde girl or boy, and the shooter who outweighed that person by 100 pounds and was 10 years older had been an African-American man, that he would have been allowed to go free?
Well, what you're asking here is whether the justice system works, not whether the laws are proper.
Yes, that's been my point from the very beginning. And what I'm saying is that these stand-your-ground-and-shoot-first laws make it even worse.
Well, stand-your-ground law, the opposite of a stand-your-ground law is a runaway-and-hide law. And they had that in Massachusetts for a while, where if a criminal broke into your house, you had to abandon your house and leave it to the criminal.
We're not talking about your house. We're talking about public spaces.
Well, you were talking about Afghanistan. I'm trying to explain this in a way your listeners can understand. Should you, in America, be required to run away and hide if you're attacked, or can you defend yourself against a felonious assault? And in America, you can defend yourself. Now, you can't go shoot first and just shoot at people the way you're describing it. You can defend your life if there's a serious threat. And everybody has that right, and in my opinion, everybody should have that right.
Why is it, you know, Mayor Bloomberg cited these statistics today. In Florida, since the Stand Your Ground and Shoot First law was signed into law, the very first one in the country by Jeb Bush, Florida cases have increased of so-called justifiable homicide from 12 per year to 36 per year. That's a 200% increase compared with 5 years before the passage of the law. Texas, they passed the Stand Your Ground and Shoot First law. Justifiable homicide went from 26 per year to 45 per year, 70% increase. Arizona, we saw a 49% increase, 10 per year up to 15 per year. Kentucky, they put this law into place. It went from one every other year to six per year. That's a 1,050% increase. Georgia, 100% increase. Missouri, 122% increase.
I get the point. And these are shootings where the person was found not guilty and it was legitimate self-defense, right?
Specifically under these laws, it was considered justifiable homicide,
okay,
yes.
So let's look at the statistics on who's getting murdered in America, which is what you're talking about.
What I'm talking about is who's getting murdered in America under the Koch brothers' Stand Your Ground and Shoot First laws.
Well, I'm not sure how the Koch brothers get into it.
The Koch brothers fund the American Legislative Exchange Council, which is the front group that laundered this legislation for the NRA and Walmart. And got it into the hands of Republican lawmakers in 25 states.
Do you remember when Lori Peterson was in the news after week, month after month? Well, that story was...
No, I don't, actually.
Okay. Well, it was a big news story for months.
When was this?
A couple of years ago. While that was going on, 740 people were murdered in Los Angeles. This is from the L.A. Times. The 740 people were 90% black, all of them young males, and the perpetrators were all black. The problem with murder in America is that it's a demographic and geographic and socioeconomic problem. You had one white woman, Lori Peterson, probably murdered by her husband, at least that's what the media said, and 740 black young males were murdered by other black young males.
I think, Alan, you're making my point.
You don't hear the reports. You don't hear the reports.
I think you're making my point. And it's that kind of institutional racism, that kind of blind eye is getting even blinder now when people simply say, oh, I felt intimidated or I felt threatened.
Because
he was black.
If you're saying the media doesn't cover this, we get a distorted view, I completely agree. 740 murders, all black, not one news story, but a reporter at the L.A. Times who did a feature on it, and nobody else covers it.
Yeah, this was my original question. If the 17-year-old kid who had gotten killed was white and the killer had been, who outweighed him by 100 pounds, had been black, this story would be very, very different. Alan Carwin, gunlaws.com. Thank you, Alan.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And is it really a good idea for our laws to be written by lobbyists for the NRA and Walmart and then laundered by the Koch brothers?
You lie like a priceless Persian rug on a rich man's floor. And you lie like a Tim Dog basket in the sunshine on my
I'm guessing that's in honor of Fox News and not me, I hope. Thank you. Happy birthday, Jacob. Fred in Lexington. Oh, hey, Fred, hang on just a minute. I've got a clip I want to share with you. This is Mayor Bloomberg speaking just a few hours ago in New York City.
Now, the fact is, all Americans already have a right to defend themselves with commensurate force. But these shoot-first laws have nothing to do with that or with the exercise of Second Amendment rights. Instead, they justify civilian gunplay and invite vigilante justice and retribution with disastrous results. The strongest law of all is one that is never on the books. And that is the law of unintended consequences. Stand your ground laws prove that that's true. And that's demonstrated by the widely reported increase in what are deemed justifiable homicides in stand your ground states. Look at what's happened in three major states during comparable periods before and after stand your ground laws passed. Before stand your ground law became law in Florida, the state averaged 12 cases of justifiable homicide per year. Since the law was passed, the average has been 36, three times higher. Pre-stand your ground, Georgia averaged 7 justifiable homicides a year. Since enacting stand your ground, the average has been 14 a year, twice as many. And Texas averaged 26 justifiable homicides a year before passing a stand your ground law. Since the law passed, the average has been 45 per year.
So there you have the numbers. Fred in Lexington, Ohio. Hey, Fred, what's up?
Hi, Tom. You know, as a former policeman and a progressive, I know that's got to make a lot of people's heads scratch. But I know some
former cops who are progressives. You guys are out there.
We need to step back and just really take a look at this Trayvon Martin situation from a forensic and a policing point of view.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a month after the incident, the FBI walks around on a photo op. That's all that was. If you talk to any FBI investigator, serious field investigator, he'll tell you that that was just nothing but, you know, for the television.
Right.
Any solid defense attorney, if he were charged with manslaughter or murder, once they get into court, thanks to the police department completely hammering that investigation, turning this man loose without doing any solid body of evidence collection and preservation, at least as far as I can tell, quite frankly, they've set this thing up for failure.
Yeah.
The chief of police, the local prosecutor, made a knee-jerk decision for the bench that night and released that man.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't. That no legal protocol was followed whatsoever. So if and when indictments come down, there's a legal effort to pursue Mr. Zimmerman. This should also include the Sanford Police Department.
Yeah. Well, and apparently that...
Aggressively.
Go ahead.
And also the gentleman there, the local prosecutor. They set this thing up with absolute and total incompetence. As a rookie police officer in the early 70s in California, we would do leapfrogs to protect evidence.
Right.
This was many, many years ago. We would get chewed out if we made one little mistake because we knew that we'd have to follow that trail, the chain of evidence.
All the way into the courtroom.
Crime scene. None of this was done that I can tell. I think that's where we need to look. We need to look at, we need to look at the.
But it's also the stand your ground and shoot first laws that were invoked as the rationale for that, both by the police department, the prosecutor's office, and the alleged perpetrator, well, not alleged, the guy, the pretty much self-confessed killer,
true, but the stand your ground laws were used as a obfuscation.
Yeah.
It was an easy way for them to slide out underneath responsibility to collect data and evidence.
Yeah, in your opinion and mine. I mean, we'll see how this plays out, but I am inclined to absolutely agree with you. Thank you for the call, Fred, and thanks for watching Free Speech TV. Laura in White Lake, Michigan, listening on 1310 AM. Hey, Laura, what's up?
Yeah, hi, Tom. You have an excellent program.
Thank you.
I wanted to make a couple of points about the Trayvon case. First of all, in reference to some of your other callers, white people support justice for Trayvon, too. Believe you me, I'm
absolutely
outraged by this. A couple of things. One, so what if he's charged with anything, if nobody can find him? I mean, they let
police,
a long time ago.
Yeah, the police know where he is. There's that. I think that we have been reassured of that in the media by the police department. They've been keeping track
of it. I hope so. Second thing is, I have serious concerns about the special prosecutor. I don't understand why she didn't go with a grand jury, since if you don't have a grand jury, you can't issue a first-degree charge,
right,
and you can't issue subpoena. To me, referring to your last caller, there's at least two criminal issues. One is the murder of an innocent young man, and the other is abuse of police power.
Well, no. You mean in terms of the investigation?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, and finally, you know, stand your ground. I know that it's been invoked numerous times, but how in the world does this apply when this child was hunted down and killed? And they have witnesses that show that his killer was on his back when he was on the ground.
Yeah, or after he was dead. And,
yes.
And you know, the argument that Sean Hannity makes is that after Trayvon Martin beat George Zimmerman so badly that he broke his nose and smashed his head into the pavement, George Zimmerman shot him, and then Trayvon Martin fell over and rolled over on his back, and then George Zimmerman stood over him as the witnesses showed up, and sort of like the magic bullet theory that Arlen Specter came up with back 40 years ago, you know, tumbled through the air. It's now the Sean Hannity magic bullet theory.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
27 minutes past the hour. This story developing, but at the same time, the president is out there saying, why doesn't Mitt Romney pay his fair share of taxes?
And every time I felt the hurt and I felt the giving, getting me up off the wall, I'm just gonna take a minute and let it ride. I'm just gonna take a minute and let it breeze. I'm just gonna take a minute and let it ride. I'm just
so the battle of the billionaires is on. Actually, the battle of the billionaires is over. I should correct that. The billionaires who are fighting, you know, Foster Freeze was going up against Sheldon Adelson. Foster Freeze, whose front man was Ricky Santorum, was going up against Shelley Adelson, whose front man was Newt Gingrich, was going up against Paul Singer, whose front man was Mitt Romney. All these billionaires, they're no longer fighting each other. Now they're all going to join forces behind Mitt Romney to take down President Obama, who doesn't have that many billionaires. He does have some millionaires, though, patriotic millionaires, they call themselves. But it's not that they're funding a super PAC the way the billionaires are. Instead, they're asking for their taxes to be raised. That's the big event at the White House today. And they're taking a tour of a Head Start facility. These 20 millionaires, patriotic millionaires, and the president a story that probably will get absolutely no coverage whatsoever in the corporate media because it's all going to be George Zimmerman wall to wall, because the Republican prosecutor down in Florida, the minute the president's story started to break, decided to break her own story that in 3 hours she would be breaking a story. Now, I'm not usually a believer in conspiracy theories, but that seems just a little too neat for me. Particularly given the fact, that the strongest argument, shall we say, against the candidacy of Mitt Romney that President Obama has is that Romney is not only a multimillionaire, a quarter of a billionaire, but he's one of those people who gets most of his income in the form of dividends and interest, and thus last year paid 13.9% income tax. 13.9% on a couple, $10-20 million bucks in income. And the president is saying, your first million, that's fine. You can only pay 15, you can pay 13.9% on your first million. But after that, you have to pay what working people pay. Only he actually wants to cap it at 30%. Working people can pay up to 35%. It's pretty amazing, really, when you think about it. It's quite extraordinary. 866-97-THOM, our telephone number, Mark in Crystal Springs, Mississippi. Hey, Mark, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how you doing, man?
Good. How you doing?
And I'm a truck driver, and I experience racism all over this country.
Are you white or African-American or Hispanic?
I'm black, man.
You're black, okay. All right, so.
And my girlfriend is snow.
Uh-huh.
All right. Now, on the Strayvon case, I'm talking about the, first of all, there was this neighbor that was vouching for Zimmerman.
Right.
That's what I read. Saying they actually were trying to break into his house. And Zimmerman was the one that actually called the cops. And, followed these guys and made sure he led the cops to these guys. But then in that instance, the cops told him to stand down.
Yeah.
Also.
Well, and not only that, I mean, just if you just consider the logic that Sean Hannity is putting out, that Trayvon Martin beat up George Zimmerman. First of all, it's pretty hard to imagine a 17-year-old who is under, who weighs 100 pounds less than the guy who's chasing him, and the guy who's chasing him is holding a gun. That 17-year-old is going to somehow beat the bejesus out of that guy, out of the big guy. But for a moment, let's just assume it happened. Does that mean that if you are or anybody, if a person is being stalked by somebody with a gun and they feel threatened and they turn around and try to stand their ground by punching that guy out, that guy then has a right to kill them? You got it? No? Okay. Yeah, I think we've lost the connection. But anyhow, it's pretty straightforward stuff. Jim. Listening in Atlanta, Georgia, or watching in Atlanta, Georgia on Free Speech TV on Dish TV Networks. Hey, Jim, what's up?
How you doing, Tom? Listen, I just wanted to ask you a question. Why was Zimmerman out there patrolling in the first place?
Neighborhood watch. He was the volunteer, the unpaid volunteer neighborhood watch guy.
So he was out there patrolling in the first place because blacks were breaking into homes. That's why he was out there. That's why he was following
actually, no, that was the story that came out early on. That was the story that got promoted on Drudge and on Fox News and repeated over and over and over again, that there was something like, 4 or 5 break-ins and 18 robberies. And it turned out that when they actually did the numbers over the last year, there had been a barbecue stolen and a bike stolen in that neighborhood. This is a white gated community. There's very little crime.
Well, that's not what I heard. And
no, well, it's not what you heard because you were watching Fox News. But I encourage you to go back and read the actual news stories or look at the crime statistics. I mean, they have been thoroughly checked out and vetted. I mean, it's just Marlene in Gary, Indiana. Hey, Marlene, what's up?
Hello, how are you?
I'm well.
I love your show.
Thank you.
Okay. I wanted to say something about this hoodie everyone's talking about.
Mm-hmm.
It has started to rain, and that's why the young man put that hood up. And a second thing, I wanted to tell you that the head of this neighborhood watch said that when they set it up, the police came out there and talked to them and told them not to carry any firearms. If they saw anything, just call in.
Right.
That was the instructions.
That's right. And
so why is he out there with, excuse me, a gun?
Yeah. It's a very good question, Marlene. And hopefully we will find out tonight how the local authorities are going to be dealing with this. But in my opinion, and thank you, Marlene, for the call. In my opinion, the crime, as it were, about this crime is not whether or not, you know, is not the what's going to happen from this point forward, starting today with some sort of a criminal prosecution against George Zimmerman. The crime is that on February 26th, the young man was murdered or was killed. And that from February 26th until April 11th today, apparently the guy who committed the murder was just, you know, walking around free. Nothing was done about it, or very little was done about it, that the police did not do their job in the first place. And they say that they were prevented from doing so by the stand your ground and shoot first laws that Mayor Bloomberg is calling out, you know, is out there saying, hey, you know, we've got to do something about this. So, and Jeff in Palm Springs, California. Hey, Jeff, thanks for listening to Sirius Satellite Radio. What's up?
Yeah, thanks. Well, you know, on this Trayvon case, you know, everyone's using the word murder. You've used it a couple times already. And, you know, all the facts aren't out yet. And just because
the facts, Jeff, are in that I'm talking about.
Well,
and that's the fact that this young man died on February 26th, and it is now almost 6 weeks later on April 11th. And the person who shot him has not been in jail during that time and has not had a bail hearing and has not been, you know, seriously investigated. And that in and of itself is a crime. And the fact that that happened is in large part a consequence of the Koch brothers setting up this American Legislative Exchange Council so that they can push through laws to keep people from voting and to get more guns in more people's hands and all sorts of other things that are of benefit to big corporations and screw the average person. And
well,
you know, those facts are in, Jeff.
Well, Tom, you've stretched this thing so far out and you've made it political like everyone else has. But, you know, the bottom line is there are witnesses that have said Trayvon did pull Zimmerman out and was beating him up.
No, there are not.
People that have seen him.
There are not.
Well, that's what I've heard. But
that's what Sean Hannity reported, but there are not.
He has not
been able to parade those witnesses on television. You have no eyewitness testimony. The only eyewitness testimony you have are the two women who lived in the house next door who said that when they showed up on the scene, Trayvon Martin was dead on the ground, and George Zimmerman was standing over him holding the gun.
Well, here's my point. Everyone's saying, you know, Zimmerman's injuries weren't bad enough. He should have never pulled a gun out. What is Zimmerman, if Trayvon was on him beating him, is Zimmerman supposed to wait until he's unconscious to pull a gun out? He doesn't know if Trayvon's got a knife or a gun in his pocket. So, yeah, his injuries weren't bad. But
So you think George Zimmerman was justified in chasing this guy for several blocks?
I'm not saying that, but a jury's going to decide. If someone comes into my house and pulls a gun out...
Jeff, this was not somebody's house. If I chase you for two blocks... do you think that am I justified in shooting you?
If you pull me out of my car and start beating me up, I'm not going
to. This has got nothing to do with the car. He was not in his car. George Zimmerman was not in his car. Where this thing happened was far, far away from a car. So if I chase you for two blocks, let me just ask you a question. If I chase you for two blocks, are you justified in turning around and punching me?
Well, I don't know about the word chasing.
Well, are you?
I think he was keeping an eye on him. He was
if I chased you for two blocks, would you have the right to turn around and punch me if I got close? If I invaded your private space, if I got close enough to you, would you have a right to punch me? I think you would.
I probably would. Yeah.
Okay, so if you punch me now, do I have a right to shoot you dead?
If I think you're going to kill me or pull a knife out or a gun, which I don't know you have, hell yeah, I am, especially before my head's cracked open by the sidewalk.
So if I chase you and you punch me, I now have the right to kill you. That's what you're saying, Jeff.
If my life's threatened, yes, I will pull a gun out and shoot you.
No, we're talking the other way around. I would shoot you, but whatever. Jeff, thanks for the call.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
I think what you are hearing here and what you are seeing here is the power of Fox News and this horrible right-wing meme. Sorry about that. Ellen Ratner, welcome to with the Talk Radio News Service. You have some news.
Well, I do have actually quite a bit of news. The president today talked again about the Buffett rule. Then they were also asked at the White House today about job loss because the Romney people are basically saying that they had some kind of conference call that women are losing jobs and, you know, supposedly Obama's for women. Well, that's not quite the statistics. There's been, of the job losses, something like 40% are women's jobs, so less than 50%.
Hmm.
And that overall job creation under Bush was 97,000 jobs a month. Well, Obama has certainly beat that record.
Mm-hmm.
The White House also said in terms of Romney, the president is consistent, but Romney, and he doesn't have different messages for different audiences. So Romney was clearly trying to work the women thing. And I'll never forget when Bush was running in 2000 at the, you know, how they make these signs and they have them all during the conventions. There was a sign, W is for women. So I bet you we see a resurrect of something like that this time.
Yeah, because George W. had the same problem with the women vote, particularly because of his whole warrior thing.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
2004.
And remember the soccer moms.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, they also today at the White House quoted Ronald Reagan. They've been digging up the Ronald Reagan quotes in terms of the Buffett rule, and they said a CEO should not pay a less rate than a secretary. That is a quote from Ronald Reagan.
Yes. Yeah, in fact, we've got the tape of it.
Yeah, so that's a pretty good one. On some issues, North Korea, they are saying that North Korea is being provocative with this missile stuff. That also what we are seeing
Hang on just a second, Ellen.
Yes,
there we go. Sorry. We've got a circuit breaker that keeps blowing.
Yeah,
here.
We have a bad circuit breaker here. So North Korea, they said, is being provocative. They're also saying that the window on Iran is closing, but it is important that the talks are happening on that front. Now, let me just talk a little bit about the suit today that the Justice Department did. They are suing Apple Computer. They're also suing Macmillan and Penguin Books. They're owned by a conglomerate. Mm-hmm. They came up with an agreement with HarperCollins, which is owned by the same people that own Fox and Simon & Schuster. This has to do with e-books. Now, they say that basically the e-books have come up with a basic price of $9.99 or whatever for an e-book, and this is across the board, and that's unfair. Well, yes, it perhaps is unfair because it doesn't have competition, but a small publisher like me, and Changing Lives Press is what we are. We're doing actually an e-book with Muriel Hemingway that's going to be out in a couple months.
Wow.
But if we're reached out in competition because it's $2 a book or $3 a book because they're so competitive out there, a small publisher like us can't make it because we simply cannot sell enough books. And so it's at $9.99 we probably get $4 or $5 a book.
Mm-hmm.
But that's it. And if it comes
to the big companies acting monopolistically and setting high prices that are very profitable for them create space for you to be somewhat profitable, whereas if it becomes the wild west of competition, small businesses have a harder time. This is
an impossible time.
That's very interesting.
And most people don't think about it that way. And, you know, yes, I agree that the Justice Department should go over monopolies, but why do you have the Justice Department going after a monopoly on things like book prices, which normally if I wasn't in the business, I would say good for them because I want to buy in less expensive.
But do you really think that if somebody is interested in reading Muriel Hemings' biography or autobiography or book, that, I mean, if they're genuinely interested that the difference between $2 and $6 or $3 and $9 is going to stop them?
I don't know, but if I want to set my rate at sort of what I consider prevailing rate, I don't want to be accused of somehow conspiring.
But as long as you're not conspiring with another oligarch, and you're not quite a publishing oligarch.
Yes,
yet.
No.
I don't think the federal government's going to come after you.
But why is what I also want to know is why is the Justice Department going after them? And I understand why. Mm-hmm. But then the FDA, which is now trying to eliminate antibiotics from various feed of cattle, it's just a suggestion. It's just an agreement. It's not law.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, I reported it today as, it says farmers and ranchers for the first time will be required to get a prescription from a veterinarian.
Well, it says that they should no longer be used for production purposes to enhance growth. The voluntary initiative includes phasing in a veterinary oversight of industry drug uses and how to medically get people to collaborate. But it's not clear that it has the full force of law. That's what I'm unclear about. We're going to have to call the FDA and find out exactly how they're going to implement it.
Yes.
They're going to use veterinarians. They're going to have some sort of voluntary agreement.
Right.
But hey, if I'm Farmer Joe and I have my little whatever, what if I decide to start suddenly feeding antibiotics to get my particular group up? I don't know that it has the force of law if some individual farmer decides to do something.
Right.
That's what I don't know.
What baffles me is why if you or I wanted to buy an antibiotic, we've got to go to a doctor. We've got to get a prescription.
That's right.
But if a farmer wants to buy 100 pounds of antibiotic to give to cattle and chickens and things that you and I, we don't eat them, but somebody else might ultimately eat, they don't have to get a prescription.
That's exactly right.
It's bizarre.
And it's like vet prescriptions, et cetera. I mean, it's up and down in this country.
Yeah,
it makes no sense. Just one quick one. There is still a really bad situation between Sudan and South Sudan. Secretary General is from the United Nations had just released a statement this afternoon at 4 o'clock. They really are trying to get the two sides together, but it's not looking too good.
So we might see a return to the civil war?
Well, it won't be a civil war anymore, but it will be a war.
A war between two nations.
Yes.
Wow. Who are the external players in this? Who's
supporting? You have Bashir and President Kiir.
No, I understand
the external,
that.
I would say China.
Is supporting their ability to drill oil in South Sudan and pay North Sudan?
And send the refineries and the ability to get the oil out of there. The pipeline goes to North
You would think, though, that
North
the Chinese
Sudan.
Would want stability.
You would, but maybe they're playing both ends against the middle. I don't
yeah.
know. I mean, they're certainly everywhere in the Caribbean. I was just having a discussion with somebody about that the other day.
Yeah. Well, they're all over the world looking for resources. They have a growing economy, something we could use. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service. Thank you, Ellen.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you live from Washington, D.C. Take a break for a minute here from all the hysteria surrounding the George Zimmerman case. We will hear from the prosecutor in the next hour. And also, well, just all this political stuff. I find science, first of all, fascinating, and I found this particular study. This is published in Pediatrics, and we've seen this explosion of autism spectrum disorders over the last couple of decades, and there's been all this Sturm und Drang about it and speculation about whether this is the result of increased diagnostic competence or overdiagnosis, or is there something, you know, going on? What's happened in just the last couple of decades? Has there been an explosion of the amount of mercury in the environment, for example, or other things? And one of the things that has generally not so much been looked at is the fact that 30, 40, 50 years ago, one in three Americans was not obese, and now they are. Dr. Irva Pichotto-Hertz is with us. And you are the an environmental epidemiologist with a specialist, especially in autism, and a professor and chief of the Division of Environmental and Occupational Health, Department of Public Health Services at the University of California at Davis, UC Davis. And am I pronouncing your name right?
I think you did get it right. I'll just add to that
affiliation. It's the UC Davis Mind Institute where this work was done.
Okay. And you're one of the authors of this report. In my setup, did I get anything wrong? I mean, it was largely speculative, but...
Well, I think you very clearly laid out that we have seen, you know, quite a substantial increase in the rates of autism. And we've also seen this explosion of obesity as well. So are they linked? And I don't think we can say they're linked at this point in time, but we were seeing evidence that women who were obese were more likely to have a child who then later developed an autism spectrum disorder. They were also more likely to have a child who had a developmental delay of another sort involving cognitive impairment and functional delays in their development.
This is fascinating. Now, when a person is obese, they're not just carrying around a bunch of extra weight. Their metabolism is fundamentally altered. Two things occur to me, and tell me if I'm just totally off base here. One is, you know, the more obvious metabolic changes that happen are frequent, typical and frequent, are the metabolism of sugar, diabetes, and oxygen metabolism and glucose metabolism associated with that, which are necessary for a developing brain and for the mom's brain, for that matter. And the other is that if somebody has that much weight on them, they ate a lot of food. And if our food is toxin-laced, somebody who is obese would be toxin-laced. Could that have something to do with it?
Well, let me start with the first part of your question. We actually looked at obesity as well as diabetes and hypertension. We grouped them together to examine the association with autism spectrum disorder and developmental delay. And the reason we grouped them is because they do share certain biochemical impact on the mother's body. The mother is the environment for the fetus and the developing brain for a good 9 months.
Mm-hmm.
So that's sort of the obvious there. What actually happens with, in fact, all three of those conditions is that there is a resistance to insulin, which leads to this poorly regulated blood sugar. And as you say, that produces, lack of oxygen and nutrients and so forth going to the fetus. And again, through the placenta, that's how this developing child gets everything it needs.
Right, and so if that hits it.
And then in addition to the insulin resistance, there's also a chronic inflammation that sets in all kinds of tissues. And that also may have some role in autism. There's a growing body of literature suggesting certain immune abnormalities that do have to do with how inflammation occurs and how it's controlled.
Now, with regard to the nutrient side of this, the food side of this, there have been, you know, we've had scientists on suggesting that there are these food deserts in America, places where it's almost impossible for an average person without driving a long distance to get fresh fruit and vegetables, for example. And that in those food deserts in the United States, and they tend to be in urban areas, you have disproportionate percentages of obesity. And that really what that obesity represents is not too much food, but rather malnutrition. It's a symptom of a particular type.
Food.
Yeah, mal as in bad nutrition, not lack of food. Could that malnutrition, whether it's, in my first speculation, toxin-laced food, or whether it's simply, nutrient poor, calorie-rich food, be something that would be destructive to a developing neurological system?
Well, that might be some part of what accompanies obesity. We in fact had published a previous paper relating to maternal nutrition that suggested that mothers who did not take prenatal vitamins prior to conception. In other words, even before they've conceived and in the first month of pregnancy, we're also at higher risk of having a child who developed autism. So probably the nutritional aspect is going to play some role. I think it's really important not to see this as there's going to be one smoking gun that's going to answer the question of the causes of autism or the rise in autism. It's clearly multifactorial, meaning multiple causes, and that's multiple causes across, you know, all of the people developing autism, but also within each child. There may be, in the beginning, some susceptibility genes. We know genetics plays a really critical role. And then add on to that, you know, how, what was the nutrition like just before conception? You know, what happened in that first trimester when very sensitive events have to occur for the brain to develop, you know, to really even form properly.
Right.
You know, neurons have to migrate to the right place. They have to set up connections with other neurons. They have to have their, you know, a really tight supply of nutrients of other kinds of cells that supply that. So it's just, and it's so exquisitely timed that even, you know, something that's transient could have an impact if it happened at the wrong time.
Well, and we've seen, I think it's fairly well demonstrated now, that there's some sort of an association between a lack of, for example, folic acid in early stages of pregnancy and neural tube disorders.
Exactly.
I'm forgetting the name of the condition. I had a niece with it, where the spine doesn't form around the
spina bifida.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Yeah. And you know, folic acid is just in green leafies, right?
But,
and if people don't get green leafies, or if they don't get a vitamin that contains it, you've got a higher risk of spina bifida. So, you know, it just kind of makes sense that there would be a connection with all this stuff.
Yeah. And in fact, it's actually hard to get the really large dose that appears to be what you need for preventing those neural tube defects from just diet, which is why, you know, we really recommend women start taking those prenatal supplements before they get pregnant. And in fact, in our data, really that was, it was, you know, some people did have more folic acid in their diet than others, but really, it seems to be the almost mega dose.
Right.
So we have
about 20 seconds left. We're out of time. Bottom line is good nutrition, take your vitamins, maintain a good weight if you're of childbearing age.
Maintain a good weight, control your blood sugar, and that's going to be good for the mom and good for the baby too.
There you go. Dr. Iva Hertz-Picciotto, thank you so much for being with us today.
You're very welcome.
I appreciate it. And there will be a link to the study over at our website at tomhartman.com. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Remarkable. Remarkable how what we eat affects not just us, but our children, and then, of course, ultimately their children. Welcome back, Tom Hartman, here with you. Albert in Friendship, Wisconsin. Hey, Albert, what's up? Albert? No Albert. Okay. Dwayne in Petaluma, California. Hey, Dwayne, what's on your mind?
Yeah, when I first saw the articles relating to overweight mothers and the autism, one of the things that people are eating so much of nowadays, of course, is the high fructose corn syrup.
Right, and I've been preaching on this program for years, people, you know, for 9 years now, people are just starting to make the association that back in the 80s, back in the 70s, when high fructose corn syrup started becoming part of our food supply, and really in a big way in the 1980s, as all the soft drink companies shifted over to it.
Right.
If you look at obesity rates and you just throw a 5-year delay in there, the high fructose corn syrup consumption in the United States and the obesity rates, in my opinion, follow each other with about a 5-year lag period. And high fructose corn syrup is not just pure high fructose corn syrup. It's stuff that comes from corn. And what's wrong with that corn?
Well, one thing I want to connect it to, though, is the bee colony collapse, that the people who've been having the most trouble with that feed their bees high fructose corn syrup.
That's right. And there's a belief that that might be contaminated by pesticides.
Yeah, I wanted to connect the two and refer to it as bee autism, as the reason the bees can't find their way home to their hive.
Oh, that's interesting.
And connect these two up, and I wanted to add that to your previous conversation. I hope that the scientists are connecting those two dots.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. In fact, we were going to do that this week as a follow-up to last week's Geeky Science, where we talked about, you know, colony collapse disorder being associated with the nicotinoid and other, but principally the nicotinoid pesticides. But you're correct. Over this last couple of days, there was an article published, I believe it was in Science, about how the colonies that were experiencing colony collapse disorder most severely, they were using high fructose corn syrup rather than cane sugar or some other sweetener to feed them during the winter, and to replace the honey that they had taken out. And that high fructose corn syrup came from corn that may well have been treated with pesticides. Or it was just the high fructose corn syrup itself, because it's a chemical that doesn't exist in nature.
And we should be checking the particular type of pesticides that are being concentrated there. There's actually some names, I believe, on the Science article you referred to. But what I would comment is that the organic farmers, I know that raise their bees organically, have not had nearly the problem.
Right. Yeah, although if they're near a field that has been heavily dusted, then apparently that problem does show up. Dwayne, thank you for the call. Excellent point. Malcolm in Park Forest, Illinois, listening on WCPT. Hey, Malcolm, what's up?
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
Great.
I don't have to wait till Friday to talk to you.
Yeah, it's nice, isn't it? It's great. It's great to be live now.
Well, two things. But the first thing, briefly, is George Zimmerman's dad. Is supposed to be a retired judge and a conservative. What part is he? He's the mysterious X factor behind the scenes in this. And if this man has some juice with the right wing, and this being an election year, maybe he's influencing this situation.
I'm very curious about that. I don't have any firsthand knowledge other than just the stuff that I read in the papers. And that, and the fact that the prosecutor is a Republican appointee, and she basically blew up President Obama's big day that was going to be probably his signature hit on Romney for only paying 13.9% taxes with his patriotic millionaires group, by not coming out and saying, here's what we're going to do about George Zimmerman, but saying, in 3 hours, here's what we're going to do, which, of course,
well, look, Tom, can you look into this? Because I think this man, if he's got juice and part of the conservative establishment, and this being an election year, I bet you he has some influence on what's going on, and this kid mysteriously disappeared. I think his dad has got a lot of juice somewhere behind the scenes, and that's a big factor that no one is taking into account.
Well, I genuinely don't know, Malcolm, but I'm going to keep my eyes open, and if I find out, I'll let you know. Thank you very much for the call. And, this is a tough one. John in San Luis Obispo. Hey, John, what's up?
Well, I actually was I was glad to hear the nutrition lady there and the guy after that, because this whole Trayvon thing, it's affected me a little bit as far as how bad I feel for the family.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to get off of that and get off that downer and maybe go somewhere else with this.
Okay,
but. Coming from the L.A. area, there used to be a show. It was a public access show called Wally George. And I don't know if any of your listeners know about this. You can look it up on YouTube. It's all over YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a complete, what I believe to be a satire, but just Glenn Beck on steroids and then on steroids again.
Really?
It's completely absurd. It's beyond Jerry Springer. Beyond Glenn Beck, beyond Geraldo, it's all been mixed up into one. Throwing chairs, tipping over the desk, throwing people off the stage, and it's all right-wing, Republican, Christian dude, and he just happens to be the actress Rebecca De Mornay's father.
Huh.
And it's absolutely, it's absurdity.
And it's supposed to be a satire.
To watch.
Yeah, I remember,
I think it's a satire, but people who respond on YouTube in the comment portion, they actually take it to heart, a lot of them, and I'm like, I don't think this guy was serious.
Right. there were people who liked what Archie Bunker had to say. I mean, who seriously liked what he had to say? Back in the day, Joe Pyne, when he first started out, people thought he was lampooning right wingers. It turned out he wasn't. Was chain smoking on TV and going after people and calling them communists and things. And, And,
He was quite a character. Oddly enough, my very first girlfriend, her father was hired as the heckler in the Joe Pine.
Really?
Yeah.
They hired hecklers?
They hired hecklers.
I knew it had to be show business. John, thanks a lot. I mean, I was just a little kid when Joe Pine was on, but I remember. John, thanks a lot for the call. Great to hear from you. We'll be back 27 minutes past the hour here on the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Coming up, the good, the bad, and the new vocabulary word, ugly. Your calls and more news of the day. That would be the good, the bad, and the very, very vicissitudinariously ugly. Brought to you by EdisonFactor.com, food for your brain. The good. Ohio Governor John Kasich. In stunning comments made last week to Republican donors, Kasich said that he was all for action on climate change. He told the crowd, quote, "This isn't popular to always say, but I believe there is a problem with climate change in the atmosphere. I believe it. I also don't know how much there is, but I also know the good Lord wants us to be good stewards of his creation. And so, at the end of the day, if we can find these breakthroughs to help us have a cleaner environment, I'm all for it." End of quote. Let's not forget, Kasich is a strong conservative, and these comments come during an election year where climate change denial is all the rage with Republicans. Hopefully Governor Kasich can convince some of his colleagues to embrace climate change, too, and help save our planet. The bad. Missouri State Representative Ed Schaefer. Schaefer, a Democrat in the state legislature, has introduced a bill that would allow public transportation users in the state to have concealed weapons with them while riding trains and city buses. Legislation would block previous efforts by cities in Missouri to ban concealed weapons on public transportation. Schaefer says that allowing riders to carry concealed weapons will make both riders and the public transportation system safer. Apparently, Schaefer is unaware of the needless violence that occurs all over America every day because of lax gun laws. We need to be, frankly, enforcing stronger gun legislation and not be putting weapons on our public transportation systems. And the very, very ugly Tennessee Governor Bill Haslam. Haslam said today that he will allow a bill that prevents schools from punishing teachers who teach faulty and wonky science to become law. The bill allows teachers to teach students about creationism alongside evolution, as well as other fake science issues like climate change denial. America is already behind in education compared to the rest of the world and is a staggering 24th in the world in math and science comprehension. If we want to compete in the global community in the days and years to come, we need to be providing future generations with the best education possible. Teaching our students bad science is not going to help this cause and is very, very ugly. Amazing. John in Dallas, Texas. Hey, John, what's on your mind?
Hey, Tom. Good to talk to you. Man, I'm a big fan of yours, but disagree with just about everything that you say.
Okay. So what do you want to disagree about now?
Well, it's not so much I want to disagree with you. I feel I'm a very well-off guy. And
how much do you make?
Well, let's say I'm not at the level that, you know, the millionaire, billionaire, but multiple six figures in taxes. How about that?
How much did you earn last year? What was your gross income, your gross adjusted income?
Somewhere south of a million, north of half. How about that?
Well, I would guess that you would know the number right off the top of your head.
I do, but I may have somebody listening to the show that I don't necessarily want to have a discussion about.
Okay, so you make more than a half a million bucks and less than a million, which means that are you making this as capital gains or are you making this as ordinary income?
Ordinary income.
Okay,
so you're
paying
capital gains as well.
So, assuming that you're telling the truth, your tax rate is 35 or 36%.
Just did my taxes, came back at 35.1, both effective and marginal.
Okay. So
anyway, my point is, so I'm doing everything
under
I can to
under Obama's law. If you make more than a million, because you're almost there, if you make more than a million, your top tax rate goes down to 30%.
No, that's not true. My tax rate will maintain at 35%. It would only be on capital gains that it would go down on
2%. That's right, because you're not earning money the way Mitt Romney does.
That's exactly right. However, this is my point. This is what I wanted to call and say. Although I do disagree with you on a lot of stuff, you are the only guy that actually does at least present a rational argument and whatnot. And so I appreciate that. That's why I listen to your show all the time. But the point I want to make is don't fawn that they don't pay their fair share and all that kind of stuff, because it implies that they've done something mischievous or unfair. They're getting away with something. Say, you know what? They followed the rules. They did it based on how it was set up.
They're following the rules that they paid to make.
Be that as it may.
If you are buying, if you live in a corrupt, I mean, I have worked in countries like this. I have worked in countries where, in fact, I remember one time I was trying to get into a country and I showed up at the embassy 3 days in a row, asking to get my, to get my visa to get into this country. And they said, oh, you got to come back tomorrow. You know, we're too busy, blah, 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 blah. I'm sitting around in a cafe with an old British guy. And drinking gin and tonics on the third day. He's drinking them because it prevents malaria. And he says, oh, all you got to do is slide a $50 bill across the table, or a couple of, 320s, and you'll get your visa. And I'm like, you're kidding. I mean, I was young and naive. This was 1980. And he says, yeah, just, slide a couple 20s across the table, see what happens. And I said, won't I get arrested? And he said, just try it. And so I went back and the guy says, oh, I'm sorry, you're going to have to come back tomorrow. And I took a couple of 20s out of my pocket and I just held on to them. And he says, although I think we can make some changes and get this taken care of very quickly. And, that's what happens in countries that where the government is chronically underfunded. Civil servants are not well paid. Systems don't work. Rich people don't pay their taxes. That's the direction that Grover Norquist wants to take this country. And the best evidence of it is the fact that the millionaires and billionaires who for most of the lifetime of people who are at least, who have lived out the last 50, 60, 70 years, through most of that period of time, these people were paying 74% on the kind of income that you're talking about, or 91% on the type of income you're paying, although the first $200,000-$400,000 they were only paying 10%, 20%, 30%, 40% on at a maximum. That those people were able to buy enough legislators that they were able to make to take larger and larger quantities of money and pay less and less taxes on it. That to me is corrupt. My caller hung up. Okay. Here's somebody else who says they disagree. Mike in Rantoul, Illinois. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Yeah, hey, I just wanted to respectfully disagree with you on a couple points, and I'm hoping we can just disagree without hollering at each other. But
well, I haven't called anybody a name all day, so I think we're doing okay.
Okay. So I've read through this Florida Stand Your Ground law about three or four times, and there's nothing in there that permits what George Zimmerman did.
Well, first of all, we don't know what George Zimmerman did, but assuming that the stories are...
Well, we know he pursued.
Yes.
Okay. Well, then he's out of the law right then. Boom. Mm-hmm. Okay. And the police did their job.
Well, according to breaking news, according to the Associated Press and NBC, Zimmerman is now in police custody. The charges will be announced in about 15 minutes at 6 p.m., AP, NBC News, and Talking Points memos are all reporting that he is going to be charged. George Zimmerman will be charged with second-degree murder.
Okay. Well, they did their job initially.
Well, here's the problem. This alleged second-degree murder, if that's what he's being charged with, happened on February 26th, and today's April 11th. And again, I'll ask the question, Mike, and respectfully of you. Do you think that if the 17-year-old who had been killed was a white kid and the adult who had killed him was an African-American, that African-American shooter would ever have been let out of jail that first day?
Well, probably not, but...
Okay. Then there's no but.
The
I mean, that's...
Well, now you're blaming... I'm sorry, but you were blaming the police in this, and the police...
No, what I'm saying is that our society 100%. As a whole is racist, and nobody's willing to say it out loud.
Well, let me throw another one in there. Do you think if both of these shooters had been black, we would have even heard about it?
No. And yeah. which
and
further makes my case.
Too, I agree. But, you know, this has nothing to do with errors in Florida's stand your ground law or anything like that. I think probably had, you know, I had heard, and I'll say I'd heard because there's so much crap floating around. Who knows what the sources are half the time. But I heard that George Zimmerman's father called the prosecutor that night. You know, I don't know if you heard that.
Wouldn't surprise me. He's a retired judge. But here's the, you know, to take it back to the stand your ground laws, because neither one of us are, neither you nor me, Mike, are experts on George Zimmerman. Here's the real numbers. I mean, this is from the FBI. Florida cases from average cases, looking at, you know, the decade before and the time since, right? And this okay. Mayor Bloomberg quoted these in a press conference today. Florida cases increased from an average of 12 per year, the justifiable homicide, from 12 per year to 36 per year, a 200% increase since the Stand Your Ground, Shoot First law was put into place. In Texas, it went from 26 per year to 45 per year, a 70% increase. It's over a three-year period. In Arizona, cases increased from 10 per year to 15 per year, a 49% increase. Kentucky, it increased from a half a year, in other words, one every other year, to six per year. That's over a four-year period. That's a 1,000% increase. State after state, Florida, Texas, Arizona, Kentucky, Georgia, Missouri, Michigan, Oklahoma, South Carolina, Alaska. I can give you a list of the individual statistics for each one of these states. And in every case where the state, Alaska is up 600%. Every state where the Stand Your Ground, Shoot First law was passed, the number of so-called justifiable homicides, homicide rate hasn't gone up. The number of people who are prosecuted for homicide has gone down. And these, well actually, maybe perhaps homicides have gone up. I shouldn't say that as an absolute fact. I don't have the state-by-state information on that.
Are you still there?
Yeah, you got 10 seconds.
All right. Well, maybe they were prosecuted wrongly to begin with.
Well, that's a possibility, but I doubt it.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
45 minutes past the hour. What is it about the stand your ground? My submission is that this changes the spirit of things, the zeitgeist.
From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA.
Welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you, and Dan in Chicago. Hey, Dan, what's up?
Hey, Tom, love you to death. But thank my question was, I have a 45 automatic weapon. I leave it in a safe. I live in a rough neighborhood in Chicago. I live in the western suburbs, Bloomingdale, where you came out for the DuPage thing.
Mm-hmm.
And my thing is, was Zimmerman legal coming out of the house with a weapon? If I came out of the house with a loaded weapon, I'm automatically unlawful.
Mm-hmm.
No matter whatever else happens, and something else can't happen. But my attitude is going to be different with that gun,
right?
And I shouldn't be out of the house with that gun loaded.
Right. I don't disagree, and that those gun laws.
No one said whether or not he was even legal leaving out of the house with it. If he's in a development, he's out of his own home.
Yeah, apparently, well, you know, we will find out tonight when the indictment comes, but apparently he had a permit for that weapon, or he had it legally, or the Florida laws are lax enough that he didn't need a permit for it.
I have a permit, but I wouldn't, but it's only good for me and my property, not
right.
Patrolling somebody. He's not officer.
Right, but what you're reflecting is the laws of the Chicago area, not the laws of rural Florida.
Well, yeah, that's my question. If Florida says you can walk around exclusively your home,
yeah,
to patrol or work for whatever reason, you know, we could be given a jail time for walking out of the house with a loaded pistol.
I know that, Dan, and I don't know what the law is in Florida. I know that the laws are all over the map in the United States, in New York City,
well,
in Chicago, and other big cities.
I would like to know.
We will look into that, Dan. I'll try and find out and get back with you. Okay, thanks a lot for the call. For example, I lived in Vermont. In Vermont, you can walk into a gun store, buy a gun, conceal it, and walk out, and you're cool. No problem. There's no law. They've got the least restrictive gun laws in the nation. So, which the gun nuts love to promote and say, see, you know, they have a low murder rate. Well, they also have a low poverty rate, and they have a fairly egalitarian society. The spread between the very rich and the very poor in Vermont is not as great as it is in states that have, you know, more social ills, which gets us back to that. Marty in Madison, Wisconsin, listening or watching on our iPhone app. Hey, Marty, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Thank you very much. I was hoping you might help me develop this line of thought. Wisconsin recently passed a concealed carry. In fact, you can carry a concealed weapon into our state assembly chambers, mm-hmm. and some of our assemblymen do, or to the gallery. We've had people here arrested for simply possessing a camera. Beyond that, to the Trayvon Martin thing, I don't tend to be a conspiratorialist. In fact, I'm a new progressive, former Republican, 53, four boys, two in wheelchairs. I've got a lot of issues that I need government for now. My point to get to it, I'm sorry.
It's okay.
Wouldn't you think, and help me frame this, that this 1%, these powers that are forming or trying to transform our country into this, what do you call it, oligarchy?
Yeah.
That I kind of see them sitting back with some type of glee, thinking, you know, this is working. We've got them killing each other. Mm. This Zimmerman character, he doesn't sound to me like Einstein, you know?
Right.
He's been trained through whatever sources, lack of education or media or too many action thrillers, that he needs to go out and protect his community. He's going to carry a gun, and he's going to stalk this poor Trayvon Martin. And whether he was at some point defending himself, the result is the same. A child is dead.
Mm-hmm.
But I really, because of what's happened here in Wisconsin, I have only in the last year and a half or so really started listening to the media, or to you and some other progressive speakers, and I'm scared to death.
Of what?
Of our future for my children. I have two boys who are out trying to maintain jobs. One in New York and one in Milwaukee. I have two boys with muscular dystrophy in wheelchairs, and I'm scared to death of where this country is headed. Yeah. That I think that this oligarchy, they have so much money, they can defend themselves forever. I have personal knowledge of a close friend's child worked at a 12,000 acre ranch owned by Blackwater people,
mm-hmm.
Out in the Colorado, Utah area. Anyway, that they are just hoarding and building up their little, how you want to say it, their
compound?
Their compounds, because they don't worry at all about things going to crap.
Yeah.
They're just going to find a place to stay.
Hunker down.
And it's the details that I've picked up on, things like the Homeland Security and the TSA ordering 500 million rounds of hollow point bullets. You know, why?
Yeah, I don't know that that's necessarily true. And I can tell you, Marty, you know, you can get just as frightened by the right-wing crazies as the left-wing crazies on this kind of thing. The solution to it all is for all of us to get politically active, to participate in the political process, to speak out loudly, to get the facts and use them when you have them. Marty, I would not so much be as afraid as I would be motivated to act. And please convert that emotion into action. Thank you for the call, and I wish you the very best with your kids. Coming up next on our program, coming up tomorrow, the conservatives are once again spreading fear and panic with another scary tale. We're going to get into that. And don't forget, democracy begins with you. Get out there, get active, tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to TomHartman.com.